Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today as my guest, I have Guy Davis of Davis Construction Building Movers. Hi, Guy. How are you?
Good, John. How are you today?
Great, great. Before we start talking about moving and moving real estate especially, where did you grow up, Guy?
Our family, the Davis family, grew up in the Blue Point, Bayport area, and that's where our business was established in the early 1890s.
Wow.
And that's where we've stayed, and everyone was brought up there.
Do you have any idea, when you said 1890s, why would your father get into, or your great-grandfather would it be, get into that into the business of moving houses?
He got into the business of moving houses, basically from demand. You know, back in, it was about 1890 where my great-grandfather, James Davis, he was a farmer. There was a lot of farming going on, and farmers were always moving buildings around, old barns and sheds, and it was very common back in the day. So he was moving some buildings for himself, and then other farmers and other people were asking him to move their barns, and it just kind of perpetuated itself into a business.
I guess moving a barn is no different than moving a house, or I think there's a little bit more involved, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're all different challenges. You know, there's different types of structures and different types of framing and different eras. I guess back then, I mean, you would say mostly everything was post and beam construction. And that was the times, 1800s, 1700s. That's how they built their structures.
Right, right.
And then it changed from balloon framing to kind of standard framing that we have today. So, you know, it evolved with the times, but he was a farmer. He started out that way, and he evolved into a building mover, and eventually he had four boys, and they all but got into the business, and they were the second generation of Davis Brothers Engineering Corp, and they had it for quite a while, and then my father and my uncle took over the company in probably the early 70s, and then it got turned over to me.
What do you think it takes to be a house mover? I mean, what's some of the qualities that you have to possess?
Well, certainly you have to have a lot of stamina. This is a very demanding job. It's very hands-on. It's super physical. You're lifting heavy objects all day. You're under, you know, a fair amount of stress because you're taking something that really wasn't meant to be moved or relocated or elevated, and you're doing that. So you need to have a lot of patience when you're doing a project. You can't rush it. Safety is such a big issue in our business. And when you become a boss or a supervisor, you really become the safety manager of the job, making sure that nothing goes wrong, nobody gets hurt, no damage to the structure. So you know, you have to have a lot of different qualities, and you always have to have your head into the project that you're on with 100% focus.
That's interesting. Now, you had said that no damage happens to the house. When you raise a house, can damage occur?
Well, usually, you know, when we're raising a home or moving a home, we'll always explain to the homeowner, you may get a few cracks in the sheetrock, nothing that any major damage. You know, of course, most homeowners are expecting the worst, and just a lot of people can't wrap their brain around their house being elevated or relocated for that matter. So, you know, we try and calm them down and tell them that any damages will be very minimal, mostly cosmetic, and, you know, kept to a minimum. We've never had any big issues as far as, you know, some people think that the ceiling is going to fall down or all the windows are going to crack, and, you know, that's just not the case. And when my grandfather was in business, he would tell his customers when he was moving their house down the road, you put a glass of water on the kitchen table, and if any of that water spills, you don't have to pay me. So
that's how he operated.
Right. That's how he operated. He never gave any money back.
Right.
He was very successful.
I'm sure. So are there things that a homeowner can do before you move a house? Or are there certain things that you tell them how to get prepared? Or?
Oh, sure. We have a whole, a whole checklist of what a homeowner needs to do. We're a specialty business. We're a specialty trade. We move a house or raise a house. So usually their best bet is to have a general contractor to oversee all the trades. You have plumbing disconnections, landscaping, electrical, masonry, and excavation, which needs to be done on all of these sites. So it's usually better to have a general contractor to corral all the subs, me being one of the subs, and have them handle everything.
Right.
But there's certainly some homeowners who take on the project themselves, and they do just fine, but they have some experience or some knowledge in the construction industry.
Interesting. You moved those six historic homes in East Hampton. Can you tell us the story behind that?
Oh, sure. That was a great project. That was for Adelaide Damonil and her husband, Ted Carpenter, who had the, it must have been over 35 acres, maybe more, on the ocean, on Further Lane. And they had all these historic homes moved onto their property over the years in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And they saved them, and they refurbished them, and they kept them exactly the way they were. And they maintained them in impeccable condition. And basically, they decided to, it was getting a little overwhelming having that type of property and all those homes on one piece of property. So they decided to sell the land. But before they were going to sell the land, they wanted to make sure that these homes were preserved. And I would drive around with Adelaide Damon Mill, and we would look at properties. And it's very difficult to move houses of that size, somewhere two and three stories high, in East Hampton. So we were having trouble finding a spot. And the town, East Hampton Town Hall, came over and said, we would love to have these homes. And it was just perfect. They took all the homes. We set them up in such a way that they were functional and usable for our new town hall buildings. And it was a great project.
It sounds that way.
Well, yeah, let me fund it.
Yeah.
Most of it.
Wow. How can someone get in contact with you, Guy?
We have a website, DavisBuildingMovers.com. Most people who are interested in doing a project, we have a form you can fill out on our website, a contact sheet, and we have some questions, and we can get your name and address and contact through email.
Fantastic. Guy, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with our next guest, estate planning expert, attorney Sheila Lyons. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have with me attorney, estate planning expert, Sheila Lyons. Hi, Sheila, how are you?
Hi, John, I'm very well, and thank you for having me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. You know, a lot of boomers are approaching retirement, so when does somebody approach you about estate planning, and what is estate planning, and what does it offer?
Well, people approach me at various different ages. Unfortunately, some people come too late in the game. You can do something not as much as if it's earlier. Basically, people, once they're over the age of 18, and they don't think of a lawyer at that time, should go see an attorney with their parents, or the parents come in with them. Because one thing is, once you're 18, your parents or anyone else can't take care of your affairs should something happen to you. So that's when someone needs the durable power of attorney, which is one of the most important documents you can ever have at any age.
And what does it say?
The durable power of attorney, I tell people, it's like title insurance you buy for your house. You buy it once, it's there forever, and you hope you never need it. But if you have a durable power of attorney with the properly drafted statements in it, including a statutory gift rider for major gifts, you never have to get a guardianship. A guardianship can be a very expensive undertaking, take a lot of time, and be very expensive both emotionally and financially, because the courts get all involved in your life. But if you have a durable power of attorney, that enables someone else to step in, and someone that you select, who you know will take very good care of you, to take care of all your affairs.
But if you're, like, say, 20 years old, right, and they have the wherewithal to say, yes, I should get this, but how can they decide on whom is going to be the one to be looking after them, you know?
Well, that's a very good question, and actually it takes quite a bit of time for some people to decide, because what I explain to people is it's not a personality contest. You're not going to insult anyone. You have to select someone who can undertake this. It's very important. They might have to make difficult decisions. So that's quite a bit of the discussion that we have. I mean, people at that younger age aren't thinking of wills and trusts, but the power of attorney is very, very important. So when most of my clients come in their 50s or 60s, I'll say to them, do you have any children who are 18 or older? How old are they? And maybe they should come in and see me and get this power of attorney.
Speaking of wills and trust, you specialize in that. And my question is, should everyone have a will? And when should there be a trust?
Everyone should have a will or a trust.
Either way.
There are different reasons for having either one. The basic will is very important, because people come in to see me and they say right away, I just need a simple will. And I say to them, nothing is simple. Simple will is a terrible idea that they called a will years ago if you weren't in a taxable estate situation. It had nothing to do with how complicated your family situation was or who you wanted to take care of. But a will or a trust can also, in every one of the wills or trusts I prepare, I include what's called a testamentary trust, called a special needs trust. Because if you're leaving someone an asset or a distribution and they're on benefits which are means tested, that person could lose those benefits. So someone came into me once and said, I have a very simple will, and in going through the family tree and what everyone's situation was, I found out there was someone on supplemental security income. And I said, you do know that if you leave them an outright bequest, they're going to lose that for a certain length of time, because they're only allowed to have a certain amount of money. So you can put this special needs trust, the supplemental needs trust, 7-1.12 of the New York Estate Powers and Trust Law. It makes people feel good to hear there's a law behind it.
Right.
Says it will supplement any benefits they get, but it won't supplant the benefits. And that's very important, because people, they like to inherit something, but they don't want to lose very valuable benefits. If you have property in another state, if you have a little getaway in Florida or New Hampshire or wherever, then you want to have a trust. Because if you don't have a trust in New York that includes that property, when you pass away, your relatives will have to go to New York and get letters testamentary through the probate court, and then they will have to take those letters testamentary to Florida and do what's called ancillary probate. So it'll be twice as expensive, very time consuming, and it's just so simple if you just know what to do. But people are hesitant to go to a lawyer. Lawyers get a bad rap these days. There's too much internet planning. And, you know, I was watching TV one day, and I was just channel surfing, and someone came on who I don't like to watch, but they were talking about asset protection.
That's like most of TV.
Most of TV, right. But this particular person who's got a huge following, someone called in and said, my grandmother's in Louisiana in the hospital. She has $500,000. We need to protect it. She said, it's too late. And don't tell me that people that pay privately get better care, which isn't true. She didn't say, did your grandmother break her hip or did she have a stroke? She didn't say, do you have a power of attorney? She just scared half the country with what she said, and I couldn't believe I saw it.
Wow. So that's why if people have any type of thoughts about an attorney, go to you, Sheila, right?
I hope so. I try. But the other thing that's very important too is if you have a will in New York State, when you die, you have to fill out a probate petition or an administration petition. If there's no will, it still goes to court. Anyone who would have inherited from you, even if you don't want to leave them something, the closest blood relatives have to sign a waiver and consent. They get a copy of your will and they have to sign it. If they refuse to sign it, you've got attorney's fees, you've got court time. If you have a trust, it doesn't go through the state.
Coming out of the estate that
right,
you have.
And if you have a trust, that doesn't happen. So you really have to get to know your client and really have a good communication to know what their goals are.
Right. Well, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because, you know, especially with families, it seems like when someone passes, when the mother or the father passes, that even though they're siblings, and I've seen this a number of times with various, you know, families, it's like all of a sudden the dollar changes the whole dynamics.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Years ago.
And mom always loved me more than you, so therefore I should get.
Well, I tell people it's very psychological. Their feelings can be hurt. Why didn't? And that's important too. Sometimes during life, people give one child or another child something to help them that they need, money on a down payment on a house. And they say, okay, but that's an advance on your inheritance. You're going to get $100,000 less when I die because I gave you $100,000. I didn't give your brother or sister. If you don't put that in a will, you're absolutely right. Money does funny things. Oh, your mom told us a million times, but it's not in the will. You're going to get exactly what we get. We're going to get exactly what you got. And you're absolutely right. It's very, very emotional.
Right, right, right. So what is probate asset protection?
Probate asset protection, what happens is if you want to go on Medicaid when you're older and you need some expensive medical care, you want to go through asset protection. Probate is when you die, if you have anything that was only in your name. Administration is when you die and you have things in your name, but there's no will. So you can have a probate estate or a non-probate estate. Non-probate is another thing I discuss with clients. You can make legal provision during life for how your assets will pass, joint tenancy, beneficiaries, and trust for. None of those things have to go through the court. But if you don't do that, then you have to go to the probate court. And another thing is, if you go to the right attorney and you're in a situation that's fairly straightforward, probate does not have to cost a lot of money. People get frightened by that.
Right. Well, that's what everybody thinks. It's like all of a sudden.
It really does.
I've heard one attorney say you really don't even need a will provided or a trust. You know, why have a trust when, it just goes through probate and it's not that convoluted. But my experience, and I've seen, different executors saying how onerous the whole system is.
Well, in Nassau and Suffolk County, the probate system is very straightforward. The people that work there are very, very helpful. But then sometimes people have complicated situations they don't realize are complicated. And especially, as I mentioned before, having property that's out of state or relatives that are inheriting in another country or having people that don't get along together that won't sign the waivers. That's when you really want to have a trust.
Right. Sheila Lyons, how can someone get in touch with you and actually get your legal advice and acumen?
Well, my main office is in Garden City, and I'm at 516-877-1965.
But I do what is that again?
516-877-1965. And I also do see people in Southampton. I have an office that I use in Hampton Bays.
Oh, fantastic. So basically, to reach out to you is to call the phone, and you'll speak to them.
I always try to spend some time with people before they come in to make sure I can help them instead of having them waste their time and expense to come see me if there's something they don't need. And the last thing I'll say is when I was in law school, a professor said something very important one time. He said, you might have a gripe, but you might not have a case.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to settle. A lot of psychology goes into practicing law.
I see that. Well, Sheila, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life. And we'll be right back after the short break with our next guest, Charter Captain Bill Bittis. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have with me Charter Captain Bill Bittis. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, John.
Good, Bill. It's always wonderful seeing you. And the thing I always wanted to, one of these days, I'm going to take one of your charter cruises because I want to learn how to fish. So is that
That's what I do.
You do. And how long have you been fishing? Have you been fishing since you were a little kid?
I was fishing since I was, I can remember, actually, ever since I can remember. I grew up on the lake, so my grandfather used to take me. This was a lake up in Greece when I was born.
Oh, you were born in Greece?
Yeah.
So it's in your blood?
It's in my blood. I got bitten by the fishing bug and never stopped.
That is fabulous. So when did you come from Greece to here?
Well, when I was about 10, my family moved to New York City. Uh-huh. So I went from the country to
New York City.
To New York City, though.
And now
so that was, I stopped fishing for a little while.
Unless you went to
roaming
the
streets,
roaming the streets.
But I got back into fishing actually, since I came out to Sag Harbor, which was about 20 years ago.
What got you here? What brought you here?
My wife, actually.
They have that way about them, don't they?
She had come out here, and she said, you're going to love Sag Harbor, Usually I was in Montauk or in the Hamptons with the discos and up in Greenport I used to go. But I always missed Sag Harbor. Never seemed to find my way up there. But
how did she find it?
She came with a group of people somehow.
And said, this is the place. Let's go.
She turned me on to Sag Harbor and, hey, we never left.
You have your boat here in Sag Harbor also, right?
Yes. Had a boat since I got here. I was like, I'm not staying here unless I have a boat.
Now, so, do you have favorite fishing holes?
Oh, for sure.
You know, can you share any of them, or are they
generally, yes, I could share.
Just give a general area.
The number one fishing area around here is Montauk. To be honest with you. But that's usually.
So you go out to Montauk?
In the summer months when the water is warms up in the Peconic Bays. The fish usually tend to migrate to cooler waters, which are the ocean waters of Montauk.
Right.
So right now, though, the best place to fish is the Peconic Bays. The water is just starting to warm up. And a lot of boats from Montauk are actually coming in to the Peconics to fish.
Now, what kind of fish are out there, for the taking right now?
Well, the number one fish that people are going for is fluke, striped bass, and they're actually
striped bass and Peconic bass. Okay,
and by the ferry boats at the North and South ferries.
Yeah, didn't know that.
Yeah.
And is that because of the currents?
There's current there, and there's a choking point there. So there's tend to be little circulation of the water, and it churns up, catches up the bait fish, and moves them along.
And then the bigger
bass,
fish,
they're
fish.
Waiting for them.
Right. Wow.
That so, we have
I never see boats over there. I see the ferries, but I've never seen, fishing boats, because I like to go, around on my
boat.
Got to
go in the morning, John.
In
the afternoon.
4 o'clock in the morning?
I've caught them at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So
I have this little thing, this app that says on the fishing, because I still want to be a fisherman. And I'm leaving this to you, Bill. So it says, and it shows a chart, when's a good time to go fishing. Mm-hmm. It's always 6 a.m., in that time period, and like you say, late
usually,
late afternoon.
When the light is not, when the sun is not above at 12 noon, would say, they like to have dim light, the fish, for some
dim
reason.
Dim light?
Yeah,
when
dawn and dusk.
Dawn and dusk, interesting.
Yeah.
Is it because they're not going to be seen by the bigger fish? Is that their thinking?
It's something to do with the light, with the rays of the way they hit the water.
Now, do you use different types of bait, depending on what
sure.
you're going for?
It depends on the fish.
So, can you tell, if you have a charter, right, and do you say to the people on your boat, what do you want to catch?
Yeah, that's the first question we ask is, what are you looking to do? What do you want to catch? And if they just say, just some fish, anything, I'll look at the waters where we're going, and I'll ascertain what kind of fish there are there. Mm-hmm. And we'll try a mixed bag or just a certain species. If they want to do fluke fishing or just striped bass.
Wow.
Or
now,
just some bottom fish.
How long do you stay in a spot? Do you?
Because
I see some of these, the bigger boats come out of Greenport. And also, they go, they drop the lines, and then they go beep, they ring the bell, and they, it's like the line just landed, and they're, let's go to the next
those
spot.
Those are the big boats. They anchor up over a certain bottom structure area where the captains know the fish are holding up.
Right.
And they'll anchor up there, and they'll chum the water sometimes and wait for the fish. Usually they stay 10, 15, 20 minutes. If they don't catch anything, the captain will move on.
Right.
Because maybe, you know, maybe there was another boat that passed by, or, you know, the fish have just moved along.
Now, so, how do you work it? I mean, obviously, that's on this
thing. I'm a lot faster. I usually stay 10, 15 minutes over a spot. If I don't get anything,
no
you
nibbles.
Just move on to a next spot.
Right. So, how about the fish finders? Do they work?
They work.
They work.
I mean, all this new equipment now is amazing that they have. We have sonar and...
Sonar. So yeah. You actually have... they're beeping for the fish?
Yes.
And it's going beep.
It throws out signals, and it actually catches the oxygen in their lungs. There's air in their lungs, actual air in the fish lungs.
And that's
how
the thing?
Sonar works.
That's amazing.
So it works. I mean, you see where they are, and you just make a few passes over there and change baits and see what they're eating at the time, what they're feasting on.
Right. Have you ever had a scary day on the water?
Oh, for sure. I try to avoid those days. But years ago, when we had less equipment.
About Halloween, you could say. When I say, you want to go for a scary trip? It's Halloween.
Usually try to stay.
Stay away from on those days.
Halloween. It's just the weather. You have to be very careful.
Can
weather,
it change quickly, something?
It could change very quickly, especially late summer where there's thunderstorms moving through. You have to watch for the storms. You know, I've got caught when I just didn't realize there were storms coming, and... I got caught once, and, you know, I was praying for dear life, and I was by myself.
Oh, by yourself? No.
But just have to keep the boat straight
with the waves coming
through.
As long as you don't have a perfect storm, right?
Exactly.
You're okay.
I made it.
You made it, right. So you're going to have another day out there. And so if somebody wants to come out on your charter, how can they reach you?
My cell phone is 917-912-9693. They could text me there.
What's that phone number again? 917?
917-912-9693. Or on my website, which is Sagapo Charters, which is SAGAPO Charters at yahoo.com.
Fantastic. Bill Bittis, Captain Bill Bittis, it's been a delight having you on the program.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.